Hello and welcome to Dion's Gaffer Tapes with me, Dion Dublin, the podcast series that gets the real story straight from the men that know, the gaffers. And if that's not enough, thanks to our friends at Beer 52, you could even get a case of their beer delivered to your door while listening to this podcast. I'll tell you more about that a little bit later on. Every week we welcome a different guest into the studio, and this week I'm delighted to welcome an old friend of mine and Norwich City legend. It's the one and only Mr. Brian Gunn. So, Gunny, how are you, mate? It's been a while since we've chatted. Are you well?
I'm very well, and we don't live that far apart now. We live in the same county.
People don't know about our background, and we've known each other for literally since... I think it's late 80s. I think it was 87.
Yeah, would be.
87, 88, when I actually went to Norwich for the first time.
Yeah.
And you were one of the players, along with a couple of others, that kind of... I was 16, Gunny, at the time, and you... You sort of welcomed me to the club at Norwich City, first and foremost, by throwing your boots at me so I could get them clean.
Good test, that one. I say it's a good test. That's the first test.
It is, isn't it?
Do
you think that's something that's missed in the game, those kind of things, you know?
Well, I think the word respect comes out, and I think that's the starting point, because then you could find out, you know, what sort of respect a youngster has. You know, for you, as you mentioned there, I was the first-team goalkeeper. And I think another reason why I took to you straight away was you were good friends with Dale Gordon, your brother was good friends with Dale Gordon. Dale was my room partner. So when I came to Norwich in 1986 from Aberdeen, Ken Brown, Mel Machen plonked me in with Dale Gordon, and that was me forever. Then I couldn't get into the bathroom for all the hair products. he'd make sure that, you know, Disco Dale was looking good for match day, and that started the night before. So that was him. And then obviously when he scored a goal and he went over into the corner and did his disco shuffle, if he found his dad in the crowd, that was even better. But I think from meeting you right at the beginning, I think you showed the respect that that's a good starting point for young football players. Yeah, clean the boots. Okay, you can do that. That's good. Now, you know, let's see what you can do on the football pitch. Unfortunately, it didn't work out for first team football at Norwich at that time. But I think it helped you, and it sort of gave you a good starting point for, you know, to send you on to Cambridge. And then obviously then when you started playing first team football, we all knew who Dion Dublin was.
Mm. Well, it was yourself. I remember cleaning your boots, Rob Rosario's boots, and Kevin Drinkle's boots.
I think you got all the size 10s. You got all the size 10s there, at
size
least.
Size 10s and 11s. Yeah. But you're right, Gunny. I took a lot of pride in that, because I knew if I got it right, you know, as a young pro for a senior who was in the first team, and you do the boots right, you get that little bit of respect from them as well, and they start to think, hold on a minute, I might look after him.
Well, and I think then as well, it's one of those things, and you all know, Dion, Christmas is coming. Christmas comes, doesn't it? And... if the apprentice has done a good job in the build-up to Christmas, he gets a good tip.
I did do it because of that, honestly.
Well, a lot of them do. A lot of them do. And that was one of the things I learned at Aberdeen. I had the gruesome Willie Miller, Alec McLeish, Jim Leighton, Willie Garner, who was a big rough-and-ready centre-half as well. So, again, the boots got thrown back at you if they weren't clean, for one. And also if the Adidas stripes weren't striped on. You had to get the old white paint on there and make sure they were ready for the weekend, because I knew that the lads got extra money if they were on television. But what the lads didn't know, I used to get extra tracksuits from the Adidas man. And Colin Wildridge used to send tracksuits through to me, because obviously Aberdeen being in Europe and being on television all the time, he always asked me to make sure that the boots were the stripes were white and the three Adidas stripes were showing. So I learnt, and you know, I had that respect that you know, my players' boots were good, and you know, ready to go on the pitch and, you know, obviously perform at the highest level with the stadiums that we're playing in.
Just to finish on the sort of young players and the players of my age back then, do you believe that players miss out, young players nowadays miss out on not having to do those jobs?
Yeah, I think they do miss out. And I think, I mean, the ones I meet, and obviously I work in the football industry and, you know, come across a lot of the youngsters. I think the youngsters would like doing that. They would like to look after boots. They would like to do things that, you know, the they hear about. They've heard that, you know, all you guys on television saying that in my day, you know, they used to do this, used to do that. And I think, you know, whether we get a, you know, a full circle and they get back round to that, I don't know. But certainly, you know, the top players, they have respect. The youngsters that, you know, go on to make it big, you know, they've got that respect built into them. And cleaning boots, I don't think would have fazed them at all. And you know, being talked to in a different way from senior players, they would have learned quicker. You know, it's missed, I think, but at the same time, you know, the people in charge of football believe they're doing it the right way.
And you know what, as well, selfishly, I'm reminiscing here with you really, Gunny, to be fair. I remember going to, it was Trouse, wasn't it?
Yes,
it was Trouse. Yeah. So at Trouse, just for all you people listening, there was one building. It was a symmetrical sort of wooden building. You went into the middle, with the doors were in the middle. And as you went in, there was this big, massive wooden sort of floor in the middle. And then you went to the right to the first team dressing room and to the left for everybody else, all the kids. Yeah. And again, back to what you're saying, Gunny, I wanted to turn right at some stage to go to the first team dressing. But you have to do turning left first, earn the right, clean the boots, clean the floors, all that kind of stuff. I think would put the younger pros nowadays appreciating it a bit more. It's kind of on a plate compared to what we had to go to.
Oh, God, it's definitely on a plate because, you know, even the salaries that, you know, scholars get, you know, if the scholars in the scholarship, you know, the money that they get as part of the contract is way exceeds, you know, what we got in our day. And you know, you'll know exactly how much that was. So, you know, that's a starting point, but we didn't do it for the money. We did it for, you know, we wanted to be a football player. We wanted to learn. If we had to do things to get us there, we did them. And as you say, that Trouse was a horrible place to clean. It wasn't a great place to clean. I mean, I was always brought up to, you know, take your kit off and put the socks the right way. I know you did that as well. I know that, you know, 100%. And fold the kit up. Whereas there's other players, you know, who would roll their socks into a ball and throw them, you know, all over the place.
At us.
At everybody. So you know, they did have to learn it hard sometimes from some people. But, you know, those jobs and leaving the building at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you know, they worked hard. They trained in the morning. They made sure all the kit was out. You know, they made sure all the kit was washed. And Betty, the wash lady, she did most of the washing. And then the drying as well, making sure it was all ready for a training the next day or on Monday after a weekend. So yeah, I mean, there was lots of memories that we have that these players aren't getting. You know, I don't know. They're probably sitting in their nice plush classrooms, you know, learning sports education or something like that, or, you know, doing
which is good, Gunnar, and we want them to do that, don't we? We want them to have that education. They need that education just in case,
just something extra. That's good. And, you know, I think our young lads still did a college day as well, so, you know, it was in their sort of itinerary for the week to do that. So, you know, those cleaning days were interesting when, you know, you had the likes of Robert Fleck who loved screwing his shorts up and his, you know, his socks up and throwing them at lads, and I'm taking Flecky out, but there was more than Flecky. There was loads of them there that was doing that. But you know, it was a good, and I mean, a lot of players come through that Norwich City Academy.
Yeah, good players as well. Some really,
and that probably wasn't even the academy then. That was just the youth team.
That's right.
And got themselves into the first team, and you know, you're going. I'm hearing stories about Craig Bellamy and Keith O'Neill. You know, Andy Johnson, you know, all these lads went on to play in the first team and, you know, had great careers in the game. And Darren Needy, I spoke to the other day, you know, he's another one that came through the whole boot boy system and cleaning the boots. The cheekiest one, obviously, was Keith O'Neill because coming over from Ireland, and he used to not have a lot. You could see that, you know, his boots were old. And so he was always cheeky enough to ask for a pair of boots. And, you know, he asked me one day, "Hey, Mr. Gunn, any chance of a pair of boots?" So I've chucked them out the sunroof window, and he's like, got these two pair of high tech. He's loving it because I was sponsored by High Tech back then, and I couldn't give them away. It was one of those I couldn't give them away. But Keith was quite happy with them, and it paid off in the long run because he actually invited me to go to the Belfry with him to watch the Ryder Cup back in 2001.
See, you knew what you were doing.
I'm not daft.
So, Gaffer, I must say thank you to our sponsors, Beer 52. Now, I do like a craft beer, and Beer 52 are on a mission to find the world's finest beers. Every month, they select beers from small breweries all over the world and send them out to their members. Now, they have over 150,000 members who all rate the beers every month. And this month, I've been allowed to put together a crate of 8 of the highest rated beers for you guys to try free. All you have to do is go to the website and cover the cost of the postage, which is £5.95, and you'll get this crate worth £24 delivered to your door. There's no minimum commitment, and you can just try the beers, see what you think. If it's not for you, then you just press pause or cancel at any time. So if you fancy a free crate of fine craft beers, then go to beer52.com/Dion and check it out. That is spelt beer52.com. Now back to my old gaffer, Mr. Brian Gunn. So Gunny, tell us why, first and foremost, all those years ago, why goalkeeper?
Oh, wow. Well, probably because I like getting dirty. You know, I was one of those...
I'm talking about football now. Let's talk about football.
Yeah. Come on. I used to like getting dirty in the playground, diving around in the mud. And I used to, like, if I hadn't been diving on my... with my trousers on, my school trousers on, I'd make sure I'd have shorts underneath. And my mum used to, you know, sort of just throw me into the bath when I got home from school. But yeah, I always seemed to like it, being in goals. There was another professional goalkeeper from the same town who, well, he was actually in the primary school team before me, and I had to wait until he got to primary seven before I actually got into the team. So I think I was about 3 years younger than him. So okay. I always had to wait for Robert Geddes, Bobby Geddes, and he ended up signing for Dundee, and he had a game, and you know, he was a professional as well from the same town.
And then there was a space for you.
And then there was a space for me in goals. So, you know, that was me in goals then. And then obviously when secondary school, there was a lot of good young goalkeepers up in the high school. So I was caught between the ages of school years. I could be under 15, I could be under 14. So I used to play in goals for the under-15s and play outfield for the under-14s as well. So I did that all the way through my school career until I signed for Aberdeen when I was 14. I went on trials. Wow. I went on trials after getting beat 10-0 in a North of Scotland schools v Aberdeen schools game. And I was told it could have been 20. So I must have done all right in the game. And my attitude after letting goals in was, you know, let's go up and save the next one. I was fortunate that there was a guy called Lenny Taylor who was in charge of the Aberdeen schools. He was there with Bobby Clark, who was the actual Aberdeen goalkeeper at the time. He was off injured, and you know, he loved his coaching, so he came all the way up there to watch the game. And then I got invited to Aberdeen on trial, and basically I met Bobby on a visit back to Aberdeen last summer when he told me the choice between three goalkeepers, and one was called Andy Marshall, one was called Nicky Walker of the Shortbread family, and the other was me. And he picked me.
The Shortbread family, as in the biscuits?
Walker Shortbread. So Nicky Walker, really? he's a goalkeeper.
You should have stayed friends with him, Gunny.
Well, I'm still friends with him. I do eat his biscuits on regular occasion. But Nicky ended up signing for Rangers, and Ian Westwater signed for Heart of Midlothian. So I went to Aberdeen, which was great for me. It was the closest professional club to where I lived in Invergordon, which is 20 miles north of Inverness. So I used to travel down for the school holidays with a guy called Eric Black, who you probably have come across as well. So Eric Black was from a village very close to me. So we left home together at 16. You know, at 16, you know, that was fantastic. And obviously, you know, going in to do those boot duties, those, you know, dressing room cleaning duties. You know, Alec Ferguson was a manager at the time with Archie Knox. You know both of them very well.
Yes.
And we had a kit man. You know, he did everything behind the scenes. His name was Teddy Scott, and he was very well respected by all of the players, because at some stage they were all in his reserve team, or they were all in his. Reserve team, and then there was another team that used to go on a minibus on a Monday night to play all these like outrageous friendlies against Arbroath, Forfar, Montrose.
All over the place.
All over the north of Scotland.
So all under his kind of umbrella.
And you had to go through Teddy's test to get into the first team. I think it was one of those that once you passed Teddy's tests,
You're okay.
You know, you're okay then. So, you know, I was fortunate to be a young goalkeeper. As I said, Bobby Clark was injured when I first got there. And Jim Layton was the goalkeeper. So Jim Layton was number one.
Plenty of competition then. Plenty of good competition by the sounds of it.
Yeah, well, it was good competition. There was another guy called John Gardner who was there in my first season. So I just used to play like sort of half those reserve games and most of those ones on the Monday nights. And then John Gardner left the season after. And then when I was 17, I was basically the number two goalkeeper behind Jim Layton.
When did you realise, and I know you won't agree with this, but when did you realise that in order for me to be a goalkeeper, I've got to be slightly crazy? Not quite wired right, because we all know that keepers are a little bit edgy.
Yeah, but I think I was edgy as an outfield player as well. You know, I was always.
I've seen you play outfield in the boxes, Gunny. I'm not sure about that.
Oh, come on. I'm sure I've not made you before.
Stop it.
Yeah. So, you know, I was always confident in my ability. Sports, you know, I loved being in the school athletics team. Basketball, I was in that as well. So, and I always fronted up. There was always, you know, big players in the other teams that used to maybe kick a few of our lads, but I was always the one that would be, you know, there sort of fronted up, making sure that they were protected.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the goalkeeping side of it was just, you know, a big 6'3" you know, skinny at the time as well, lad from the far north of Scotland, you know, get my teeth knocked out in the first 6 months of being a goalkeeper, a professional goalkeeper.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Was it a challenge or?
It was an elbow. It was one of Teddy Scott's tests. My best friend, Eric Black, who left home with me at 16, it was him. So his test was you get the balls out wide and you'd have about six people in the box, just float them into, you know, the penalty spot and the keeper's got to come out and get the ball. But the other six have got to go and challenge them. You know, that's where we got our hard knocks. That's where we learnt the tough side of football. You know, there was no hold bars in some of the training sessions as well. You know, if you want to be in the team, you've got to be, you know, strong, got to be physical, but you've also got to be a good player.
I suppose then you know, Gunny, don't you? You know, if you can pass one of those tests, you know that everything else will be easier later on down the line, and then you've done all your tests and you've proven yourself, and you end up getting to Norwich City, which is where everybody knows you from, and you played with some of the best players that have ever played for Norwich. That team that you played in, you were keeper in, and skipper in a lot of the time as well.
Yeah.
Probably, on paper, was it one of Norwich's best teams?
Yeah, well, I'm sure Norwich could make a fantastic team on paper of all the players that have played for the club. But if you're talking about that era alone, then we were blessed with some very talented players. As I say, I arrived in 1986. Archie Knox said to me, "Look, big man, you know that people go to Norwich to die." I think he meant to retire, but the way he came out with
fair enough.
Yeah, so I think that's what he said. And Alec Ferguson said to me, he said, "Look, we reckon you're a top six goalkeeper. You know, don't make Norwich your end destination. Go and prove that you're a top six goalkeeper."
And that was from the gaffer, was it?
That was from the gaffer. That was from the boss. And my first season at Norwich, they just got promoted from League Two, because it was League One in those days, League Two. And I arrived in the October, and they were top of the league, so top of the old League One. And they'd lost a few games, and then I got my chance after Graham Benstead, who was the goalkeeper at the time, who injured his shoulder in a 6-2 defeat at Anfield. So I got my chance, and we kept great form throughout that season. And that was the season. And Ian Crook arrived that season, Mark Bowen. Who else came in that season? Ian Butterworth came in with me. Bertie Biggins was already there.
Okay.
There was Dale Gordon, obviously, was already there. Kevin Drinker was already there, so they were part of the setup.
Good players there.
So those were him in this team. Dave Williams, who ended up being the coach, he was a central midfield player who loved passing the ball. So I mean, Ken Brown as manager and Mel Machin as his assistant. You know, Ken West Ham, Mel Bournemouth. Mm.
Should you have done more, Gunny? Should you have done more as a team? The quality, you just reeled off quality there. Should you have done more, do you think?
Well, if you look back, Dion, we finished fifth in that first season. And in the old days, before the Heysel disaster, we would have qualified for the UEFA Cup, which would have been classed as a success, I'd imagine, back then for Norwich City. So that was the first season. That was 86-87. Then 88-89, we finished fourth and got to the FA Cup semi-final.
Okay.
And then we'd added the likes of Robert Fleck. You know, Fleck had come into the side. Rule Fox had come in as well. I think Dale was sort of on his way to West Ham and then on to Rangers. There was a few changes. John Polston came in. Andy Linnegan was there as well. You remember a few of these names.
Yeah, Mark, definitely.
I hope I mentioned Mark Bowen because he played nearly 400 games as well. And then obviously the introduction and the you know, the sort of the growing up of people like Chris Sutton, Lee Power, Tim Sherwood was in our team then as well. We had Tim Sherwood as a central midfielder, so that was a team that that was strong. It was a good footballing team. As I say, we finished fourth that season.
That's success. It's got to be success, isn't it, for a Norwich side? It's got to be. For a Norwich football club.
It was a shame because we used to win all the big games, and then we'd have a... I think it was the depth of our squad used to be the one that used to go against us. You know, I think we probably had too many young players at the end of a season, or, you know, when there was injuries, we didn't have a chance to... we didn't have the money to replace them. So it was just... we needed to keep players fit. But... and again, we finished with fourth, so that would have got us into UEFA again, at least.
It's amazing how, I'm not going to say it's overlooked, but during that time you're in goal there and you're having these good seasons with Norwich, were there people that you look back on and think, well, I'm doing okay at Norwich, thanks to... Did you have heroes yourself that have helped you along the way or while you were playing?
Well, some of my heroes I looked up to were Pat Jennings. I met him at Pittodrie when I was 16. Ray Clements, I saw him play at Pittodrie in the European Cup against Aberdeen in 1980. Neville Southall, Bruce Grobler, those types of players. And I played against them in my first six games. Peter Shilton was another I played against as well. So, you know, those were the guys I used to see on television in Scotland. And then, you know, when I made my move... I was number two to Jim Leighton. You know, I have a lot of respect for Jim Leighton. He's a top goalkeeper. And, you know, the reason I couldn't get into the team was because he was a top goalkeeper and he was hardly ever injured. And he'd only get dropped once or twice a season just to get a kick up the backside from the boss. You know, he'd give him a kick up the backside every now and then.
Was that from Sir Alex?
So it was only Alex then, but he was still, you know, he was still tough.
Still the boss.
You know,
he was like, still the boss.
Still the boss. Still the boss. And
do you still keep in touch with the gaffer now?
We had a Zoom call in May with our 37th anniversary of winning the Cup Winners' Cup against Real Madrid in Gothenburg. And I managed to get Jason, who is a good friend of mine. I didn't tell you, when I used to babysit for the Ferguson boys, Mark, Jason and Darren.
That's where you got all your money from then. You must have paid you well, Gunny.
I got paid well. I got fed well. I think I even got Walker shortbread there as well. So Nicky Walker's family needs to thank us for that. And I played snooker on the snooker table. That was one way of keeping him with the boss. But I enjoyed that. So I knew Jason. So I called Jason up and said, look, I know your dad's, you know, he might not like these Zoom calls and things like that. So he was the first person on the call. He was the first person waiting for all of us to come in there. And then it was a bit of a surprise for some of the other lads. And we had this call and he was sort of looking in and he was laughing at all the stories we were telling. Then he would come out with a few quips himself. And then I think he thought that, right, I've had enough time now, I better let the lads get on with it themselves. And, you know, but I think it was great. Everyone really enjoyed seeing him. And, you know, he's there for all of us, as you know, Dion.
Yeah,
you know, you can send him a message, you send him a text, and he'll come back to you straight away. I got caught out one night after a boozy golf day.
No, not you. Surely not you, Gunny. Boozy?
Just the once. Yeah, I must have won. But this lad said to me, he said, look, he says, who's the most famous person in your phone? And I said, that's got to be Sir Alec Ferguson. He says, ring him. So I've had to ring him in front of the lads in this minibus going home. And it went to voicemail. And then the next day I was panicking because I looked at my phone and I'm thinking, like, Alec Ferguson, what was he doing? What happened there? And then I looked at the numbers and he's got two numbers that I've had in the past. And a few weeks later, I played in his golf day. He has his golf day at Mere, as you know, and I got an invite to play in his golf day. And as I walked in, I'm thinking, he's going to batter me. He's going to have me. And he didn't say anything. And I'm thinking, like, I must have phoned the other number I had and left a message on there. So
you had a touch?
I had a right touch. I could have been off the Christmas card list and off every list that I've ever been on.
Why do you think that every single player, and I'm going to say players that have played under the gaffer as well, but every single footballer, why do they have so much, I'm not going to say respect, because that's a given. But you change your body language, don't you? Whenever you're around the gaffer, if he's in the room, players change their body language. They sort of sit up and say, as if stand to attention. What is it?
I just think it's respect. I mean, the players have got that respect for the manager, but it's his pedigree and where he's come from. He's always worked hard to get to the next level. And when he got to the top level, he kept going. And, you know, I think the players that he brought in respected that, you know, he was giving his dedication, his life towards that. You know, I know that, you know, Kathy, his wife, you know, she goes to games and that, but, you know, he was at football matches all the time in my Aberdeen era. He'd go down to the Glasgow, you know, 2.5 hour drive and watch games just to make sure he got his tactics right for the weekend. You know, there was no other scouts he would send to the games and trust. He wanted to do it himself. Him and Archie Knox would go out. And on occasions, I would actually travel with them. We got into our coaching early at Aberdeen. And I don't know if you know a place called Largs in Scotland. That's where they do their coaching badges. SFA do their, there's a big national football centre there. So we used to go down in the summer, and we used to go down as guinea pigs for the coaches. So we'd be on the pitch, and the coaches would use you in their sessions. And thinking that, man, we're on the pitch all the time. It's just, we're knackered, like, by the end of the day, you know.
Being told what to do and where to stand.
Being told what to do, where to stand, thinking like, wait a minute, there's something not right here. We'll need to suss this out. So that's when we asked if we could do our coaching badges the year after. So we actually sussed out then that we could do our badges and still be on the pitch, because, you know, I was a goalkeeper, some of the other lads, Eric Black and Neil Cooper, outfield players, you'd always get picked in everyone's session because everyone wants to do a good, you know, good practice.
Was that the start, Gunny? When you stopped being a keeper and stopped being a professional footballer, did you know then, I want to be a coach, I want to be a manager? Did you know, or did you just know just then at that moment?
I think it was keen. I was keen and, you know, I wanted to know all the ins and outs. I loved their the training sessions. You know, there was always something new came, and they weren't scared to invite people in. You know, foreign coaches used to come in and put on sessions, which then we would use. You know, just different things. Jan Korver, the Korver, you know, all those tricks that the lads do. So he had Korver over, you know, before anyone knew about him. So this was, you know, his dedication and his knowledge. And you know, he wanted his players to be the best they could be, and you know, that's what he did. And you know, he inspired us all. If you look through all of his teams, and I mean, you know, a majority of his teams, the amount of players that have gone on to be coaches and managers is higher than, you know, 50-60%. There's a lot of players who've gone on to do well in coaching. Yeah. So I think it's the knowledge we gained from him. And although none of us have been able to get anywhere near his achievements.
So as a manager or a coach, would you be the kind of character that you would want to manage and coach when you was a young lad at Norwich? Were you easy to manage, you as a player, you as a person?
Yeah. No, I was easy, very easy to manage. And, you know, I used to like working hard. You know, you do your bit on the training pitch. And you know, we worked hard and we played hard in that era, Dion, you know that. And, you know,
what was the nightclub called in Norwich again, Gunny, that we went to? What was it called?
Rick's Place, Ritzy's.
That's it, Ritzy's, the one where your feet stuck to the carpet. That was Ritzy's, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, that's the one, yeah. But, you know, even before, my first experience of an away trip at Norwich was the surprise of seeing a crate of Foster's Lager going on, a crate of Webster's Bitter, and a bottle of gin. And I'm thinking, like, what's this all about? He says, oh, that's for the way back if we win. You know, I said, well, who drinks the gin? He said, oh, the gaffer, Ken Brown. Ken Brown was the manager, you know, and he didn't like lager or bitter, so he had the gin and tonic. So So that was something new for me as well when I came down to England, was the different sort of culture of, you know, drinking after a game in a player's lounge. We didn't have player's lounge in Scotland at that time. Maybe Celtic and Rangers and Aberdeen did, but none of the other teams did. So you know, that was a game. So I said, you know, you had to train hard if you were going to, you know, have a few shandies over the weekend as well. So
you never drank shandy. You were just were you a pure lager drinker, Gunny, back then, or were you bitter?
I was lager more than bitter.
See, I was bitter. Yeah. I was a bit more cultured than you.
Yeah,
bitter.
You were. You were. Remember you drinking bitter, yeah.
If you now, with hindsight in place, what kind of advice would you have given an 18-year-old Gunny back then?
Just believe in yourself. And I think I was lucky enough that I believed in myself, because as well as being Jim Leighton's understudy, I was also Scotland's under-21 goalkeeper. So, you know, the only time they saw me play was when I was playing for the reserve team. So, and you know, I played a few first team games, but the coaches in Scotland knew, you know, I was good enough to play at that level. So once I'd played, you know, I think in 10 under 21 games, you know, I was trusted at that level as well. And then, you know, I just knew that I had to leave. And obviously I did leave Aberdeen to go to Norwich to, you know, start a first team career, really.
The managerial side of things, do you wish you'd have done it for longer? Do you wish you'd have stayed in the game managing for longer, or are you happy with getting out when you did?
Well, so we played a game against Barnsley, and the night before, one of my best friends, Maggie Park, was her 50th birthday party. So we stayed up at Burnham Market in a hotel. It was all booked, and before I was even given the role of being manager. So I went up to this, it was a whole weekend we were there for, so I went up to the Host Arms, Burnham Market, the Friday night, and I'm sitting there, I'm drinking water and half a glass of wine, and like, you know, the nerves were there, you could see I was nervous. So we had to get tickets for all that lot, because it spoiled their weekend. They had to come all the way back to Norwich to watch the game, but we won 4-0. So after the game, I'm led to believe a few of the lads were in the chairman's ear, in Neil Doncaster's ear, saying that, you know, they enjoyed the week. It was nice and relaxed. We feel good around with Gunny around. So, you know, they were sort of giving me a bit of a recommendation. So I went back up the road to Burnham Market, stayed in the hotel, got absolutely... I really enjoyed myself.
You had a few beers then, did you?
Had a few shandies that night. And then I got woken up at 7 o'clock by a phone call from you.
Yes.
At 7 o'clock in the morning, you phoned me and said, Gunny, you've got to go for the job. Everyone wants you. So I think you must have been speaking to some of the lads after the game.
Yeah.
They must have said to you this, that, and the other. And one of the last things you said to me, I'd love to be there with you. I'd love to be involved with your coaching team. And I'm thinking, like, wow, that makes sense. That's fantastic. And he's a legend. You know, he's just retired from the game.
Stop it.
He works for Sky. So, like, you know, I'm sure it would be not a problem. So I'm thinking, right. So I get up. Susan, Dion's just been on the phone. He wants me to be manager and he wants to come. So, right, okay. So I'm building it up. And then I'm thinking, wait a minute, who else could we get? We could get Ian Crook over from Australia. Crookie's into coaching, he's got his badges. So yeah, let's phone Ian Crook. So I phoned Ian Crook from the beach at Holcombe Beach. Ian Butterworth, right, we get Ian Butterworth, he's at Hartlepool, he's got all his badges as well. So I want to surround myself with people with experience.
And trust again, like you mentioned, trust.
And trust, of course, yeah, trust and respected them. And obviously John Dean then, as you know, would come in as chief scout. So all of that sort of fell into place, and obviously you were the one sort of inspired me onto it. Maybe the alcohol helped with, you know, sort of making my decisions slightly blurred.
Good.
But I phoned Neil Doncaster. I said, Neil, I believe you're holding, you know, sort of interviews for the job. You know, I'd like to be added to the list if possible. You know, I think I really enjoyed the you know, my part I played at the weekend, and you know, I feel I can offer something. And I told him my plans, but he said, "Well, keep that up your sleeve, but you know, obviously introduce it to the board tomorrow. So you've got an interview at 4 o'clock at Stansted, at the hotel at Stansted."
That's right, yeah.
And I think the likes of Ian Dowie had been in, Ian Holloway, Paul Ince were all interviewed as well. And I managed to go in there, and you know, I probably talked my way into the job, but I suppose that's what you
no,
have to do in an interview.
Not you, surely not.
Well, that, you know, I think the idea of having this sort of dream team. So it was a case of right, okay, let's go for it, and let's go and get the other guys sorted out now. And then Neil Doncaster came back to me, says, "Bad news, Dion can't get out of his contract with Sky."
Yes.
So I went, oh no. All right, does that mean I'm not getting the job? But fortunately, you know, I think you'd helped me enough to get to where I needed to get the job. Ian Crook fell into place very quickly. I think he was on the plane before we even offered him the job.
He probably was.
Ian Butterworth was at Hartlepool, so I don't think he was waiting too long up there to come back to Norwich to, you know, where his family were born, his children were born. So I think he was really looking forward to it. And John Dean, obviously, was a great servant to Norwich City, both as a player, as a assistant, as a manager, and now as a chief scout. So that all worked in very, very nicely.
The good thing about it, Gunny, and the reason why I made that call to you, and having spoken to the players as well, was it was like, Sir Alex, you must have taken on what the gaffer told you to say, and you kept everything simple. You didn't complicate it. You allowed us to, or you allowed the players to play the way they wanted to play, you know, with boundaries, of course.
I think, yeah, no, there's definitely boundaries, definitely, you know, a framework.
Structure as well.
There was a structure there, but you get Wes Houlihan on the ball, the structure disappears, doesn't it? So, but as long as you've got players filling in, and that's what we had. Yeah. I mean, Wes would get the ball on the left side and end up on the right, and you know, stick one in the top corner. You know, we couldn't stop him doing that, and we won 4-0 that day, and he scored two. So, you know, a lot to thank Wes for getting that job as well.
So, having met so many players, played with so many players, so many managers. As a manager and as a player as well, you know a lot of people. Now you've retired, you know loads of people in the game. I know that for a fact. And this is my last question to you, and it's always my last question to my pals, to the managers that have managed me, to the people that have been managers. Who, if you were to have a dinner party, would you invite? You've got four people that you could invite. I'll tell you what, let's say four managers. You can invite four managers. Who would they be, dead or alive?
It's an easy one for me, Dan. I mean, I might miss out one that probably wasn't a manager for as long. So I would invite Sir Alex.
You'd have to, because you'd get a clip round the ear if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. I'd invite Ken Brown. I'd invite Dave, was a fantastic manager as well. What a motivator. Loved the club. Dave Williams as his coach. So again, he introduced the framework. Dave was very good defensively with the players, but you know, he was respected by the club and the fans. And as I say, you know, again, we finished fourth in his season, and we finished in the semi-final in 89 as well. So you know, he nearly brought, you know, the dream to Norwich City. So, but well respected, and someone that I used as a host on match days, and his knowledge of the game is second to none. So, Dave Stringer, and then Mike Walker. So you give me an easy. I mean, the only ones I've really missed out on there as managers are probably caretakers like Gary Megson.
Yeah.
Meggy wouldn't speak at a dinner anyway. He'd sit in the corner and
he'd shout at a dinner. He'd shout.
Yeah. He'd be grumpy. He'd be grumpy. If he had to buy a bottle of wine to take along, he'd be grumpy. But no, Meggy was a great. I love playing with Meggy as well, because again, he gave everything. But he was only a caretaker manager. So my full time managers that I had, I've got to leave out Alec McLeish, because he was my manager at Hibernian, but I only played 12 games for them. Those are my four. So the Aberdeen and the Norwich connections come round. And I know they'd all take a nice bottle of wine from me as well.
Ah, you see, there's always an underlying alcohol. You're an easy sell, Gunny.
Ken Brown would take a bottle of gin.
Okay, yes, obviously, as he did as a manager.
Yeah.
Listen, Gunny, thanks very much, pal, for taking the time. Listen, I've taken loads of your time today. You've been so honest about your career and the managerial career, players you've played with and against, and bit of an insight into you has been incredibly interesting, and stuff that I didn't know about as well, which is good for me. So thank you so much for your time today, man.
No problem. I really enjoyed it, Dion. Thanks a lot. Checks in the post, I believe, Dion, isn't it? Checks
obviously,
in the post.
Mate. As always, yeah, mate. As thank always. You. Yeah, I think I've got your address. Is it Trouse?
Send it there.
Okay. Well, that's it for this episode of Dion's Gaffer Tapes. Huge thanks to this week's guest, Mr. Brian Gunn. Very good friend of mine. Been great talking to you, pal. Thank you so much.
All the best. Thank you.
Thanks again to our sponsors, Beer 52, who have let me put a special case of 8 of my favourite craft beers together, which you can try for free. All you have to do is cover the postage, which is £5.95, and they'll get those lovely craft beers to your door. All the details are online at beer52.com/Dion. That's beer52.com/Dion. And they've also stuck in a snack and a copy of Ferment magazine for every case. Don't forget, you can get in touch with me by messaging me on my socials. And if you've liked what you've heard, please make sure you subscribe to this podcast. Share it with your pals. And if you've really liked it, give it a 5-star rating. Thanks very much for listening, and I will see you next time. Goodbye for now.